Should Americans remember the Cold War with the same sense of pride and nostalgia that they've reserved for World War II? Well, according to John Wiener, a group of political conservatives think so and has tried for 20 years, with little success so far, to generate warm and fuzzy feelings in the American public about the 50-year-long nuclear standoff between the United States and the USSR. He documents these efforts, and he visits Cold War memorials that have been erected across the country for his latest book, How We Forgot the Cold War. It's published by University of California Press. I'm very pleased that it brings John Wiener to our show today. Hello. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
It's a little hard to imagine the public remembering the Cold War in the same way as World War II, because although the Cold War was called a war, it didn't have any decisive battles. It was more like a standoff that ended with one side caving in.
Well, the official view, and really there's only one story about the Cold War. It's the story that Reagan won the Cold War, that because Reagan had commitments that he never gave up, he refused to compromise. It took a long time, took a lot longer than World War II, but it was a defeat of a totalitarian enemy as significant as the defeat of Hitler.
But other people were saying all along, anybody who visited the Soviet Union would tell you the country was not running all that well. We heard about real problems in its economy, all sorts of internal conflicts within the military, and Gorbachev was brought in to save it. Ronald Reagan would have been one of many factors, wouldn't he?
That is what you and I and most experts on the Soviet Union would say. But really, if you look at the Democrats in the White House or in Congress from 1948 to, 1990, there was a bipartisan consensus around containment, around nuclear deterrence, that this was an enemy that was, determined to bury us. And really, there was not much of a challenge to that view in what we call the mainstream media.
Right. JFK ran on a missile gap, and it turned out there wasn't a missile gap. But both parties ran on the promises of strong defense against the Soviet Union, which was the evil empire. When did that kind of thinking change in America? After the fall of the Soviet Union? Because there were a lot of people who started doubting things the government said, perhaps during the Vietnam War.
Well, there were certainly doubts from the very beginning. If you look at 1947, right away, even though George Kennan, promulgated the containment doctrine, he was saying within a year or two that this should not be a militarized conflict, that we will defeat this. The Soviet Union will collapse eventually, and there's no need to have this doomsday scenario. But I think the Vietnam War was a real turning point for most of us.
Because we were told that it was necessary to prevent the spread of communism, only to find out later that the domino theory had a lot of holes in it.
Yes. Nevertheless, while you may have heard that on the Leonard Lopate show, you didn't hear that in a lot of other places.
All right. Many Americans also concerned about the damage that was done to the environment as a result of producing and testing nuclear weapons.
Well, that's what I found. I traveled around the country to find out how the Cold War was being remembered. I found over two dozen monuments, memorials, museums, and some of them are at former nuclear weapons plants, plutonium factories, Hanford, Washington, Rocky Flats, Colorado. There's one in Missouri. When you go to those places and take the official tours, instead of getting the story that the workers who, risk their health producing the weapons should be honored for, defending freedom against totalitarianism, what you get, for example, on the Hanford tour, the plutonium factory at Hanford, is basically you won't get cancer at Hanford. And I think that's because the tour, even though it's the official Department of Energy tour, only runs once a month, is actually run by the private contractor who has the contract for the cleanup, which is the most expensive cleanup in the history of the world at the most contaminated site in the Americas.
But you also said that the message you often heard was one of reassurance.
Yes.
Not just that you won't get cancer, but I guess that this was necessary to keep America safe.
Well, that is what I expected to be told, for instance, at the Titan Missile Museum, which is south of Tucson, the message should be, we had ICBMs, and that's why the Soviet Union was never able to bury us. But what the tour guide there concluded was, he said, I guess it worked. That's all he said. I guess it worked. I mean, this cost, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. He should have something a little stronger to say than that.
You say there are two dozen. There was a blogger who pointed out that some of them are pretty obscure. He says he's a Cold War buff, and he didn't even know many of these existed. But I just heard a report the other day on Morning Edition that new ones are being proposed, one at Los Alamos, for example.
Yeah, there is a proposal to create something like an atomic history national landmark that would be Los Alamos, Alamogordo, and what would the other place be? It's a Congress last session refused to approve it, mysteriously enough. A lot of these places, the most recent Cold War National Historic Landmark is Hanford Reactor B, which is where plutonium was manufactured first for the Nagasaki bomb and then for ICBMs through the 70s.
And these places are all safe? They reassured you. I can't imagine. The Nevada test site, I'd imagine there's still some radioactivity there.
Well, on the tour bus at the Nevada test site, this is 90 miles north of Las Vegas, they say, you know, it's perfectly safe. And as they told us that, we drove past a sign that said radioactive hazard. And it turns out the information about the tour that's available online says that pregnant women should not take the tour, but they don't mention radioactivity. They say because of the long ride and uneven terrain.
My guest is John Wiener. His book, How We Forgot the Cold War, Historical Journey Across America. And you discovered while you were working on this book that many Americans seem to know very little about Cold War history today. Is that because so much of it was clandestine, or just that we tend to have amnesia about things that we would prefer to forget?
You know, the amnesia thesis is an interesting one. In fact, Americans are fascinated by history in general. It turns out something like one in four Americans or one in five Americans have visited the Vietnam Memorial. Civil War battlefields have millions of visitors a year. You know, the Arizona Memorial at Pearl Harbor has millions of visitors a year. So it's not that Americans aren't interested in the past or are forgetting the past, but they prefer to remember the good war. World War II, of course, has a tremendous seller of books and so on. And then there's the Vietnam Memorial. That is immensely beloved, I would say, by Americans.
You're a professor of history at the University of California, Irvine. How familiar are your students with the history of the Cold War?
Well, they're not familiar with the history of the Cold War. They know a little bit about Vietnam. I mean, UC Irvine, where I teach, has a very large Asian American population, actually. I had a student a couple of weeks ago who came and told me that her mother was on the helicopter that took off from the roof of the American embassy on the last day of the Vietnam War. So there are, you know, some of the kids come from families that have particular reasons to know something about the Cold War, but a lot of the other ones don't.
But you say that there's a campaign that is being conducted by some neoconservatives to evoke some nostalgia for the Cold War.
Yeah, I think you know, if you look at, well, for example, at the Republican primary debates, a little hard to remember now, but there were, you know, a dozen candidates running against Romney, and they met at the Reagan Library, and they all invoked Reagan. Reagan is the strong president. Reagan refused to compromise with our enemies. We need to be more like Reagan. We need to revive Reagan's, you know, defiant and uncompromising spirit. I noticed that in the general election, Mitt Romney hardly ever mentioned Reagan. So there is a It's within the Republican Party, I think.
Well, last month we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis, acknowledged as the closest the world has ever come to all-out nuclear war, and the people have praised how President Kennedy dealt with it. But you say some people on the right felt he should have attacked Cuba no matter what, and they include Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld?
Yeah, this is another history that's sort of been lost, even on the right. At the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, we're talking, you know, October 1962, Goldwater, William F. Buckley, the National Review, Reagan all said, this is the chance to free Cuba from communist tyranny. We should bomb the hell out of them. That was Curtis LeMay's recommendation to President Kennedy. And then we should have a kind of a Normandy-style invasion, and we should liberate Cuba. If you go to the Reagan Library today, they don't mention Reagan's view. What they say is Kennedy, through his combination of tactical flexibility and steely resolve, defeated Khrushchev. So this is a chapter of conservative history that's pretty much been erased.
Well, do you think that the last gasp of the Cold War was the invasion of Iraq?
There is a direct line. It is little known, but it is fascinating that the conservative lesson, the lesson conservatives have learned from the Cold War is that we can use our power to defeat our enemies, and we should. We shouldn't do what Nixon did. Nixon, you know, wanted détente with our enemies. Reagan took the other course. And Cheney and Rumsfeld, who you mentioned, believed that in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and that was the kind of underlying principle that was the basis of the invasion of Iraq.
A listener points out that it was considered Cold War here in the United States, but in many parts of the world, Afghanistan, Vietnam, large parts of Africa, Korea earlier, we did have a war there. It was a very hot war. How do the very bloody proxy conflicts and coups get treated in our history books?
You know, this is a fascinating thing, especially in Asia. Americans think of the Cold War as sort of centered on the Berlin Wall. There was the evil side, and there was the free side. But really, the fighting of the Cold War was not just in Korea and Vietnam, but in Indonesia, where something like a million people were killed, in the Philippines, the Hak rebellion of the late 40s.
That was a Cold War rebellion?
That was a communist mm-hmm. uprising in the wake of World War II in a country that, you know, the United States claimed as a military base. Yes, in Asia, millions of people died fighting over what kind of society they would have, often against American military or American-backed regimes. And, of course, I've heard that the Communist Party still rules China.
And in Eastern Europe, there are many people who are still angry that the United States didn't join in and protect them during the Berlin crisis, during the Hungarian uprising, and then the Czech uprising, Prague Spring.
Yeah, if you ask East Germans how the wall came down, they're kind of stunned and alarmed to hear that it was Ronald Reagan who brought the wall down. They think it was their own grassroots protest movement that had developed over years, and that the United States never lifted a finger to help.
So is this just America's having a wishful thinking view of our past history? Does this make us look better in our own eyes?
I think it does. But I think the other thing I found was a kind of a – it's hard to measure. But traveling around and talking to people who are taking the tours and visiting these museums, I found something I would call a kind of skepticism. Was it really worth it? Did we really need all those
nuclear
weapons?
But they were still taking the tour. There are a lot of other people who probably are skeptical who would say, why do I need to take that tour?
Well, it's hard to know. But there's some – I mean, the fascinating thing about these tours is a lot of people would argue with the tour guards. This was a – you know, how do you know this was necessary? And was this really a good idea? So I find a more growing skepticism about the whole logic of the Cold War.
Another listener mentions the invasion of Grenada in 1983, but we have run out of time. My great thanks to John Wiener, professor of history at the University of California, Irvine. Among his books, one that he visited us to talk about, Give Me Some Truth, the John Lennon FBI Files. This new one is How We Forgot the Cold War, A Historical Journey Across America. It is published by the University of California Press. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.